Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us.
Love the fact that you talked about, you know, how your community supported you and how you had actually a Canadian friend also to help you with the integration, because we always need that. So that kind of brings me to an idea just of what we can give to our listeners. We may be aware of what we can draw upon to help us with our integration, but not everybody out there does. So we could talk about what organizations or communities can do to support those, either their employees or people going to their communities, what university can do, because universities have quite a high number of graduates coming in to do studying and eventually being placed into work through their work visa permits, and also any other support that individuals can get. So starting with the organizations, I have met employers who are aware of employees being immigrants, and they've, you know, created opportunities for people to develop themselves. And I've also heard of organizations who have either different locations in a particular country, and they tend to do rotation or secondment for their employees to, you know, learn about working in a different work context and helping them, you know, build on their experiences, their global mindset.
Right.
Even within Canada, organizations are actually dedicated to supporting immigrants. Like one of them is the Pacific Immigrant Society. They have events that they do with other stakeholders, like the community at large and businesses, where they focus on helping people settle in, what are the requirements that they could get in order to meet job placements. So those are really great as well.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from these few initiatives of, you know, breaking people into that culture, you know, eliminating that cultural background, in your own experience, do you have any other recommendations for, you know, organizations or the community?
I do. So one of the things that happened to me when I came to Canada was the government of Canada sponsors certain colleges in Canada to run a program for new immigrants. You get a certificate for having attended this. So I went every Saturday morning to attend this for a period of 3 months, and it was all free. And I would suggest anybody who does come to Canada do the course. It's fantastic. And what I saw happen there was I thought, wow, this should be replicated in corporations and in a broader community, because essentially there was a facilitator who had been an immigrant herself, a wonderful Russian woman, and I forget her name now. And because she had been an immigrant herself, she could understand and identify very strongly with the struggle, especially having come out of a culture in some ways which is very different to Canada. And so it was a curriculum she took us through, like how to write your resume and all that stuff. But the really powerful stuff was she played some, let's call them team building games, or she facilitated some experiences where people got to tell their story. Other immigrants got to talk about what they were experiencing. And she very skillfully mediated that space, allowing each of us to participate, to talk about how it was going for us, and to hear other immigrant stories, because you kind of feel you're all alone, right, sometimes. And she very carefully, and in a way which I thought was wonderful, actually, with a lot of humor, got people to understand some of the key differences between Canadian culture and the cultures they came from. And then, so, for example, she told a story when she came from Russia, of once the train stopped rather abruptly, the public transport she was on, you know, and the Canadians were all saying, oh, you know, it's a great day outside and everybody okay, and everybody remained positive. Whereas in Russia, the same thing had happened to it. Everybody had become very critical, like the government doesn't work and all the rest of this, and, you know, saying harsh things, which was acceptable in the Russian context. But in Canada, that would not be acceptable, or would be very, people would find it hard. You know, too much negativity too quickly in a conversation doesn't go down well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? No, I agree.
Yeah, and she did this from her own, you know, talking about her own journey and her own stories. So I think if organizations, you know, employed skillful facilitators who were immigrants to work, you know, immigrants met on a weekly basis from in the company, could meet, come to a meeting where a program could be facilitated, where they could start talking honestly about what they were going through, their difficulties, get help from other immigrants who had found solutions to these problems, because we don't always, you know, we can't solve everybody's problem, but somebody else might have the answer, right, in that group. I think it would go a long way to helping people adjust to a particular culture.
I agree as well. Research shows that integration is best in the two-way process, where it's the immigrants who are trying to commit to the culture, but there's also the need for the local communities as well to try and understand the culture that the, or the uniqueness that these individuals are bringing in. So organizations, you know, could do that by, you know, celebrating that diversity within their organizations.
Yes.
You know, I remember there was a company that I briefly worked with here in BC. They had this on their portal, one of their enterprise portal, they had this post that they set in, I think it was quarterly or monthly, but it was all about learning about another culture. They embraced the fact that they have a diverse team, and they had this post that they celebrate this particular country. And they educate people about important aspects of their country, important considerations for people with, from that country. And they work with the particular employee to actually post that. And I was like, oh, this is a great idea, great way to understand, make people understand that it's not just one-sided. It has to be a two-way process. That's a good one.
Yes. And, you know, building on that, Kifty, the other thing is, you know, I came from South Africa and Africa, and I thought, you know, I'd experienced multiculturalism. I thought that Canada, you know, wasn't going to be difficult in terms of multiculturalism because I had a couple of different cultures in my own country. But there's a radical sense of multiculturalism here, which I truly, you know, was astounded by when I came here. And so the complexity is this, is that, you know, I had in my mind, like I suppose many immigrants do, that there was kind of going to be sort of one kind of Canadian I was going to deal with, you know, sort of a uniform Canadian culture. So there is in some senses, but in other senses, you are dealing with many cultures here because Canada allows people to retain their diversity, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, when I went to my first teacher, when I taught where we both began at Gastown Business College, and it was I was predominantly teaching Korean and Asian students. I initially did some things which had them really not liking me as a teacher, which had worked very successfully in my own culture, right? And, you know, I got this really negative feedback from the director, and rightly so, to say, no, these students, they don't like this. But this had made me a very successful teacher in my own culture. And actually part of this thing was actually how some parts of mainland Canadian culture work. But in this particular context with these Asian students new from Asia, South Korea and Japan, this particular teaching technique just didn't work. So there are context within context here. These are kind of micro communities. And it takes a lot of humility. Because my ego was really dented, you know, because I thought, you know, I got one teaching awards in South Africa and everything. And now suddenly I'm told I'm the worst teacher. You know? And when I changed what he told me, his feedback was great. I mean, when I changed that aspect of my teaching, things changed immediately with my students.
Yeah? Well, that's a very, very lovely insight. Yes, that is actually very possible. Now, before we move into what universities can do, I also like the idea coming from this McKinsey study I mentioned. There was a statement around, you know, changing the narrative by thinking of immigrants as an opportunity to gain long-term dividends. Mm-hmm. Rather, you know, of course, there's always that short-term challenge that prevents organizations from bringing people into their organizations. Yes. There's also that, especially when you have the individuals who are only able to commit to part-time during their studies. I've had employers say, no, 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 Gifty, you know, we have to train them, they may leave and it's part-time, it's complicated. But they forget that long-term benefits from actually bringing an immigrant into their workspace. So changing that narrative as well for our own, oh, there's no Canadian work experience, or you may not fit in here, to think about what could we benefit from this individual and the wealth of experience that they will have and the different perspective that it could be bringing to the team goes a long way as well. Because there's still that mindset of, it's just too much just to have anybody different. They want that similarity within their team. So that's another advice to, employers out there. Start changing that way of thinking,
Yeah, I agree. And I want to add to that too, to say that organizations have got to take responsibility when they bring these people in to go and have a look at some of the research, like, for example, Hofstadter, or go and look at the issues around high context and low context cultures, and be able to evaluate where the areas of cultural shock are going to be the greatest for this person that comes in, and be able then to mediate that for that person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are some radical differences between high and low context cultures. And again, I'll use another story of mine. I know I'm making myself as vulnerable. So in my culture I came from, when you were employed, your employer would sit down with you and in detail, sometimes mind-numbingly boring detail, but detail, go through every aspect of your job description with you. You know, you do this, you do this, you do this. So this very, very detailed orientation. Now, my experience when I came to Canada is that that didn't happen. There was an orientation, but nowhere near that level of detail. Because Canadians expect people to ask questions, right? And the thing is that what you don't know, you will ask. Now, the culture I came from, you don't ask questions too quickly because sometimes that's considered to be rude or impertinent or maybe shows that you're ignorant. So you don't ask questions as readily, okay? So I came and I remember one of my bosses coming to me and says, can I have that report? And I said, what report? They said, this report. I said, sorry, I haven't even written it yet. And I said to them, you never told me I had to have this report in there. And they said to me, but you never asked.
There you go.
Yeah. So between us was this huge gulf, okay, based on a culture, low context and high context cultures and the difference between them. Now, what I'm saying is if we're going to bring people in, for goodness sake, we've got to do our homework well as organizations and say, okay, this is going to be bumpy for this person coming from this particular context. We've got to provide the training, facilitation, so that we soften that for them and we lessen the disconnection between them and other members of our organization. Because, like you, I hear organizations say, we bring these immigrants in and the adjustment period is really rough and, they upset people and it's unproductive. Well, we're all big people. It can be much more productive. We've got the research out there now. We know where these big bumps are, speed bumps are. Let's help people navigate them, provide them the resources to do it. And then we can bring in these skilled people with very little trauma to ourselves or our organizations.
So basically setting them for success.
Taking responsibility for some of the stuff they don't know, saying, okay, maybe they do, but many people don't know these things, and saying, okay, here's the major differences, sit them down and say, this is how it's going to play out in the workplace. And here's what you need to do to cope with it. And checking back next week, put them in on the group, all that stuff I've talked about previously, but making sure we target, where it's going to be difficult for them.
I agree 100%. And, that's just that beautiful conversation around two-way process, two-way of doing things, from the employer side and from the employee side. And the same recommendation goes to universities as well. Teaching at the university, it's just unbelievable the amount of unknown that some students do face. Even as an international student myself, quite a lot of navigating of the system within the university, the system in terms of the organizations that I may be trying to get into, and of course the big new environment that I'm in. So there's always that so many lots of things you're expected to be doing and focusing on your studies, and you're also expected to find a way to make it within that new context. So organizations as well as university hold that to them. And when people come to me and even myself, sometimes I don't know who to ask, or sometimes I'm not sure I'm supposed to be asking the questions. And that brings that need to reach out. I had a survey sent to me sometime 2 years ago around my experience as an international student. And I remember speaking to the interviewer and sharing some insight of what could be done. And she was really surprised. She was like, oh, yeah, that's true. That is something we can consider. Because taking that survey is one point of doing things, understanding from different perspectives. I was very, I think that was for a research, not from the university, but it was really great to see questions being asked about your own experience, because we tend to put international students in a box in terms of how we categorize their needs. You know, everybody fits in here, but that's not the case. Each one of them have a different perspective, different prospect in terms of what they want to get with the organization. Their expectations are different as well. So when you put them in the box, then you're only meeting the needs of a specific group of students. So organizations not only need to find other ways to continuously gain feedback from their students, continuously gain feedback, and acting upon those feedback goes a long way as well.
Yeah. And part of that too is, you know, some things are just, like I said earlier in the conversation, are just human. They're actually transcultural. So in every society, you have people who have been pretty insulated in that society, have grown up in that society and have kind of closed-minded, have chosen to believe that their society is the best society on earth, and they're unwelcoming to foreigners and all that stuff that goes with that, that racism and stuff. Now, they're in every society, not just Canada, and they're here too, right? And as an immigrant, you're going to bump up against people who just, in any society you go to, will resent you because you're different and you maybe challenge their way of life, or they think they're going to lose their employment or whatever it happens to be, but they're not representative of the mainline culture or of what that culture actually represents. But it's hard sometimes because you bump into these people and some of them can be very obnoxious characters and you think, well, that's one of, this is what, they, no, all people are like this. Yeah, no, they're not. And
yeah,
so,
yeah, that's a stereotyping that we're trying to move away from. Great.
Absolutely.
Wonderful question.
Yeah, so give you. I want to go back to this university thing because I think it's really interesting question you asked. So if you think of international students, lucky in the sense that you came as a very mature postgraduate student, but there's some very young people come to this country as well, right? So what do you think we could do in Canada to assist international students who come here? And for the students' sake and for Canada's sake, because we've got a blistering manpower need in this country. We need skilled labor. It's just terrifying.
No,
and how do we make it so that these young people can come here and succeed and feel like they really want to be part of Canada, or maybe come and move here, work here for a few years? What did you suggest tertiary institutions could do? I mean, I have some ideas, but what are your ideas? What do you think?
One thing I find is work more with the community, work more with the government, work more with employers, you know, from partnership with employers, because if you are able to let employers know what they can do or what the students can do for them, you're already creating a beautiful platform where your students can easily transfer their experiences or transfer their knowledge, their practical experience into the workforce. Practical Intern Solutions, one of the things that I enjoy doing is working with practicum students and working with interns, because I know that it gives them the opportunity to take it, what they've learned in the classrooms, into actual real life situations.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I teach, every semester I show that there is a project with a real employer. Because if at a university you're simply giving that knowledge and you're not thinking in the long run how they can use it, there's a gap in what you're trying to attain. And that gap can only be closed by forming more partnership. So many students finish their studies and they still don't have where to work. As an organization, that responsibility, as a university, that responsibility is there for them to ensure that they can close the gap. You know, through projects, you know, the number of students who are leaving, you're working with organizations to ensure that they get placements, and which can help them to kickstart that experience. Because some of them, like you said, have no experience. They just, okay, I'm going for an international studies. But then after the international studies, just waiting around. All they do, I've had experienced HR professionals. They've done their graduate studies in Canada. and I see them working at McDonald's, serving burgers. And we're missing that connection to ensure that these individuals are placed in a place where they can make most of their experiences and their skills at that level. So same thing with the ones who have no prior experiences. They could find places where they could put into place what they've learned and put into place what the experiences that they've had.
Right.
Another queer experience I had, I was speaking to during my interview as an international student, how I navigated some of the challenges. The interviewer asked me, you know, what can the organization do? And I was like, the organization in out, they post so many job requirements. And I look at the job requirements and they're fantastic. And I asked her, can you tell me what percentage of those jobs are being offered to international students? And she was very honest. She was like, most of those jobs are for people who can do it full-time. When you have international students who can fill those positions, there is a gap.
Right.
In a way they can learn. So, because the limit is you become a teacher assistant, that's right. But I have the skills, I have this expertise. Why can't I apply it? And the university is the fourth step, the fourth place where you can actually tap into those expertise. And if you don't have those openings, collaborate, partner with other organizations out there to ensure that your students are taking, there's a continuity in terms of what they're learning and what they actually need to do. Another advice is also having a way of kind of building on what those individuals bring into your organization. So I think I wrote somewhere, you know, start integration, interventions early. You want them to integrate into the new country. You would just start our plans, our action, our initiating very early, not waiting to the end when they've graduated and they're struggling to settle in. You can start that early, you know, the first few months, create plans, process these support areas that they could go in and, you know, start learning how to integrate, learning how to understand the Canadian culture. Because most universities, you have international students, there's rarely any focus on Canadian culture. There's that focus on what are you studying? Business management? Okay, that's what you learn. What are you studying? HR, that's what you learn. Okay, I'm new in this country. Something is missing. So start integration a little bit earlier so they can, you know, learn very quickly. And the last piece, and just a few universities do this, is ensuring that what works can be replicated. Students who've gone out, who have been successful,
they
come back in. Absolutely. And celebrate that success. And, you know, that's one of those, these things are just very light initiative. I mean, there's so many more, but these are things that are within the ability of the university to actually carry.
I mean, just to go into that last point briefly, that's what happened when I was at Greystone College. I saw this happen, you know, and it was wonderful where past students used to come back and talk to the students that were there. And, you know, these students had made it and they were successful. And they were able to say, well, here's what I did. And they really got listened to. And so, you know, because people were like, okay, you're from my country. I can identify with you and you've made it. You know, and so at a very basic level, it just gave people hope, but it also provided a sense of connectivity and understanding of what they needed to do.
Absolutely. Even currently teaching, students get the opportunity to work with employers. And when you put that opportunity out there, not everybody goes for it because I've realized that there is that fear of the unknown. So what I do is the students who actually up for that project, they get to come to class and present to their peers on what that was like for them.
Right.
What was that like for you? And then it lights up. Everybody has a question for those who went for the project. And most of the questions around, how was it like working for an employer? You know, always, and these were people who have past experiences, but that uncertainty holds them back. But when you start creating those little interventions where they can, you know, comfortably understand that it's okay, you know, see what some of the issues are, it goes a long way.
Yeah. So here's a big dream of mine, and I'd like to see this happen in Canada. And maybe if there's some corporation listening now, they might consider doing this. But, you know, I've often thought, I wonder what would happen if some corporations, in terms of their corporate social responsibility, approached a university and said, look, for 2 hours a week, we will give you this person, they or an immigrant themselves, and they're highly skilled in terms of facilitating. And they will run with your immigrant students a group for, say, lasting 3 or 4 months, where your immigrant students can come once a week, say in the evenings or whatever, and just talk about the immigrant experience. So in other words, the corporate would sponsor this. They would pay the person to do this. And it would work both ways, you know, because this is a person coming in from the working world. And I don't mean to be derogatory and say not just an academic, but sometimes students are skeptical of, you know, the academics. They want to see somebody who actually is a practicing dentist or doctor or whatever it is out there, coming in with a successful professional who has been an immigrant, sharing their path, but not just in a one-off session, but actually they're there in a kind of mentoring capacity to work with this group of students for, say, anything from 3 to 6 months. Of course, that organization who's sending that person in, it's a golden opportunity for them for recruitment, right? Because they're getting to know this bunch of students. They're getting to know people at a much deeper level than just the job application. And, you know, they would be free to invite then people to say, come along, come work for us here when you finished your studies. Or, you know, if they see they're in financial difficulty, they could say, look, you're in your second or third year, and maybe offer a bursary to students. You know, so there's this kind of relationship between the working world and the university life. And there's a bridge for the immigrants to move across.
Right? Yeah, that is a beautiful suggestion. You know, that is that's the connectivity. That's the sort of requirement. Because even when universities create partnership with so many organizations, it doesn't mean that the transition is going to be easy. You know, something like this beautiful recommendation goes a long way. You know, somebody just coming in and just, you know, sharing that information. And that is essential in the beginning of their studies and throughout their studies, you know. That's 100%, John.
And to listen to these young people, you know, because the mentality of, okay, we'll tell you what Canada's about, or we'll tell you how to adjust here. Here's the information, dump it. But that's not communication. You've got to get the person's respect because you've listened to their context. Yeah, and I think Canada's pretty good at the immigration thing. And I mean, they recruit a lot of people. And I've been certainly impressed with my experience of being here. There's many things which have really, really worked for me. But you know, we can just get better at it, right? You know, and yeah. we could have more highly skilled people coming here and people having easier and softer landings, right?
Yeah, I love that. Softer landings. It goes a long way. It does go because the benefits of it is actually two-way, no? And we tend to forget that. So I have a question for you, John.
Now I'm worried.
Most of the questions we've actually, you know, answered, we've addressed in our conversation. Uh-huh. But one is, if you had to do your coming into Canada all over again, yes, what would you do differently and why?
That's a hang of a question, Lily. So, okay, I think what I would do differently, I would have wanted to get to know another Canadian, you know, and there's ways you can do this because the internet, you know, the networking, another Canadian or Canadian organization I could have been in conversation with in my own country, right? Mm-hmm. Before I came here. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one thing reading about these cultural differences and things theoretically, but it's always that person that, you know, can translate for us how things really go down, right? So I think that would have been helpful. I would have started in my own country. I mean, I was pretty, I've applied for jobs and all sorts of things, but I would put in much more time now beginning the networking process in my own country. That is one of the things, I certainly would have done differently. And in terms of like my attitude or feelings of how I adjusted Canada, I would have not felt so inferior for so long about my skill set, right? So I would, you know, obviously want to listen and walk gently and humbly into a culture that welcomed me and all those good things, you know, which go with just general courtesy and decency. But I would have kind of thought, you know, I probably may have needed a mentor or a coach. In fact, that would have been probably the answer, would have been to find somebody to coach me into the Canadian workplace. Mm. You know, somebody really experienced could say, no, John, you have these skills. Don't feel shy about that. Just get out and do that. So, you know, part of that happened when I got to Greystone, actually. David Matthews, you know, an extraordinary boss. He said to me, gee, I really love working with South Africans like you. You know, and I was like, why? You know, and then he said, because you've got such a can-do, make-it-happen attitude, you know, to life, you know. And I was thinking, wow, I wish I'd been told that earlier, you know. Because meanwhile, I was comparing myself to these, you know, all these highly educated, well, I mean, I was got an education as African, but obviously it's like the first world or the developed world context. And I was from this, you know, developing world context. So having a coach or a mentor here and setting that up before I came here, because there are such people, you can do that. I had the resources to do that. Would have been a massive thing. Yeah. So for me, yeah, personal coaching would have been a huge thing to walk into that relationship when I got here.
Yeah, that is absolutely similar to what I would do, John. I think for myself as well, there is always that lack of clarity when you're in a new environment. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to understand. And that could be done faster, better when we have, you know, people who have gone through similar situations who can talk to us. So just being open about, you know, where, what I have and what I don't have, and looking for someone to be on that same journey with me probably would be something I would do differently, because I didn't have that till much later. I did join a community, but I could have looked more, zoomed in more on a few people within the industry that I could have worked alongside with, but that would have been helpful. I wish I'd have done that earlier, because when I joined the community, I joined the association as a member in the mentoring committee. I ended up being a co-chair in the mentoring committee. Now, I wish I did that a lot earlier. You know, fast track to my first few weeks and, you know, finding those individuals that I could learn from, you know, that would have been something I would have differently. So just quite similar. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing, which maybe, you know, I want to maybe as we coming towards the end of this podcast say, and we can briefly reflect on it, is I think, you know, for anybody that's an immigrant listening to this, part of what you've got to understand is that no learning happens without mistakes. And when we make mistakes, we have got to be the people to forgive ourselves, even if other people don't. Because we will make mistakes. You know, and it's crazy. I came here, I did a lot of academic reading before I came here about the different cultures and everything. So, you know, academically, I had really read up and I did that really well. However, my socialization is much more powerful than my theoretical knowledge. It's always the case with all of us. And so I remember, you know, despite having been read academically, not to ask Canadians personal questions too quickly, because in my culture, you do, you know. I remember bumping into somebody in my first workplace and asking her, you know, are you married? Do you have kids? Where do you live? Now, in my culture, that was totally acceptable. You know, I think it was totally okay to do that. In fact, it was considered you were interested in the person if you did that. But here, that's not appropriate. Right? And so she just looked at me and gave me this cold stare and said, your questions are very inappropriate. And I thought, I've read all about this. I heard all about this, you know. But here I am, just blah, blah, and my moment of nervousness just, yeah, putting my foot, both feet in it, and one foot. So I just say, okay, yeah. I've got to forgive myself. Okay.
Well, that's beautiful. Well, I love everything we've talked about. And I always love this idea that you have in terms of what do we take away? Uh-huh. So I was thinking, I believe I went the last time, John. Did I go the last time? I'm thinking
it's your turn. You asked me to go. It's your turn this time.
Okay. I think from my end, we've kind of covered quite a lot today. So I want to use my takeaway to be more of an advice, because we both fear what would we do differently to be coaching, you know, using that as a tool to navigate a new environment. So I will work on that and use that as a tip, an advice for our listeners. You know, we want to ensure that we are looking into developing ourselves or developing ourselves using the expertise of others, you know, using feedback from others, you know, listening to feedback from others and using that to find ways to adjust into the new environment accordingly. You know, so when you go through an experience, share what you call. And that learning happens through that sharing. Learning will happen through that feedback section that you're going into. And to be very cautious as well in terms of finding a coach, you have to be very careful when you're finding a coach. Look for individuals who would be able to dedicate time to supporting you. Because I've had people come to me and I can only give you very little information given my time limitation. So look for somebody who can support you fully, take time to understand what you're going through, and take time to give you feedback that is specific to you, you know, specific to your particular circumstance. And, you know, continue to have that dialogue with them around developing, you know, the developmental discussion. So that's my takeaway.
Yeah, that's a beautiful gift. Everything you've said there, you know, it's just so true. You know, for me, it's similar, but for me, it's this, you know, I have this conversation with you today and I'm thinking about going back however many years it was since we met, 5 to 6, 7 years ago we met. And again, appreciating the power of relationships, you know, that when you make friends in Canada and you make, and as an immigrant, you make friends, you keep and cultivate those friends. Because if I think about what we're doing today, I would have never thought that, you know, back then we'd be doing this, right?
Yeah.
You know, and our friendship for me has been very sustaining. You know, as we've worked as colleagues and professionals, we've worked together this over the years, this deep trust has developed between us. You know, we've been in some pretty, both of us, tough situations together. But that's for another podcast one day to tell my listeners. And in those situations, trust can easily break down and things can go wrong. But we somehow said, no, we like each other. And despite not understanding each other occasionally, I guess, we've treasured this relationship and kept it alive. Yeah? And so, you know, my takeout has been the power of that for ourselves and for any immigrant. And I'm infinitely grateful for having that with you, that deep and secure friendship. It's great.
Yeah, so very, very, very honored, John. It's been great from this side as well. It's been actually intriguing and a lot of fun, a lot of fun for me just knowing you. A lot of memories as well. So having the opportunity to actually share that with our listeners even makes it even more exciting.
Yeah, it surely has. So thanks, Abe. And we'll be seeing each other probably 2 weeks from now. I'm off to the island for a week's holiday.
Yes, John is off to the island to enjoy, you know, his well-deserved break.
And you enjoy your house when you get into it.
Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you very much.
All right.
Enjoy your week. Bye for now.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.